Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Partner Gateway version 6.20 configuring to use the SFTP protocol. Today's presenter is Max Tripolini. Max joined the WebSphere Partner Gateway L2 team about 5 years ago. He works closely with customers and development to drive WebSphere Partner Gateway products to succeed in the marketplace. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Max.
Thank you, Joseph. Welcome to everybody to this WST presentation. One of the new features released with WPG 6.2 is the possibility to make use of the SFTP protocol. So this presentation provides details on how this feature has been implemented, walks the user through the configuration details, and shows how to perform some labs, and includes at the end a section dedicated to the troubleshooting. Let's go to slide number 2. This is the table of contents. It starts basically, we're going to start with some general information about SFTP. Then we're going over the details of how this feature has been implemented in WPG 6.2. Next, we'll proceed with some configuration examples and finish with a section dedicated to the troubleshooting tips. Let's go to slide number 3. Here we have a little background about SFTP itself. The acronym stands for Secure File Transfer Protocol. It allows file transfer similar to FTP, but over a secure shell transport channel called SSH, which allows for the confidentiality, authentication, and the integrity of the message. Now, although the name contains the FTP word, SFTP is not really FTP. For one, FTP is not an encrypted protocol or allows for client-server authentication, things that SFTP does. In fact, the login information, data, and also the commands exchanged between the server and client are encrypted. Client authentication and server verification are also SFTP features that cannot be performed using the regular FTP. FTPS is also different than SFTP because it uses the real FTP protocol with the addition of the SSL for encryption, very much like HTTPS. SFTP, on the other hand, like mentioned earlier, does not use the real FTP protocol. It uses a SSH channel. Let's go to slide number 4. Here we enter the subject of how the SFTP protocol has been implemented in WPG. There are two ways we can use it. Inbound, to retrieve files from the server using a SFTP receiver, or outbound to send files to the server using a SFTP destination, which, by the way, makes use of connection pooling to enhance performance. Let's go to slide number 5. Here we have the specifics about how the SFTP receiver works. You can choose to authenticate the client either using user and password or private key and passphrase. Optionally, you can enable server verification, which requires the setup of the so-called host key file, which, as we will see in more details in later charts, stores the server key. Once the connection is established, the WPG receiver looks in the user folder of the SSH server, as specified in the configuration, and picks up the documents. Let's go to slide number 6. This slide lists down the logical steps of the WPG receiver actions. We'll have it connects to the SSH server, client authentication occurs, and optionally server verification. Also, the configured folder in the server machine, also called remote event folder. If present, the files are retrieved and placed in the local event folder in the WPG machine. From there, the files are then placed in the archive folder to be processed. Let's go to slide number 7. More or less the same items mentioned for the receiver are also valid for the WPG destination. Please notice that you need to install APAR JR 31639 to enable the server verification option for the destination as well. That same APAR also enables the auto queue functionality for the SFTP destination. Neither of these options were available in the GA version. Client authentication offers the same user password or private key and the passphrase options as the receiver. And when the authentication process is completed, the destination drops the output document in the chosen folder of the SSH server. Let's go to slide number 8. This slide reports the logical steps of the WPG destination actions when sending a document to the server. It connects to the SSH server, a client authentication occurs, and optionally the server verification also does. Outbound files are dropped in the configured user folder or of the server machine, and then the destination disconnects from the server. Let's go to slide number 9. This is a picture showing the flow and the relevant attributes that you can configure. Let's look at the flow first. In yellow, I reported the WPG receiver and destination elements. In green is the SSH server. For my tests, I use three SSHD server, which is a free download software and is within anybody's reach. The server picture shows the WPG user folders max R and max D, where R and D indicates receiver and destination. The user's public key are also placed in the server, which will be used to authenticate the client. If you look at the picture, it shows what happens during the flow. The WPG receiver connects to the server, goes through client authentication, and then calls the configured folder maxR if there are files to process, and then these are retrieved and transmitted through the SFTP channel to the WPG receiver, which places them in the event folder. From here, the files are then moved to the archive folder to follow the normal processing. Now that we have visualized the flow, the attributes on the left side of the slide may make more sense. Let's take a quick look. Poll interval is the time after which the receiver polls the local event folder. Poll frequency is the number of poll cycles after which the receiver polls the remote event folder. Poll quantity is it defines the number of files the receiver retrieves from the remote event folder on each cycle. And the retry interval, retry limit, defines the wait between the connection attempts in the and the total number of attempts. Poll cycle is the local event folder poll and file processing. Let's go to slide number 10. Now, let's take a look at some practical applications of the concepts that we went through in the previous slides. I put together three lab scenarios which I think are comprehensive of all items discussed so far. The first two labs will show a flow where the WPG SFTP receiver picks a file from a folder in the free SSHD server and use a non-EDI X12 ISA connection to pass it to a SFTP destination, which will drop the file in a different folder of the same server. The only difference between Lab 1 and Lab 2 is that we use a private key and the passphrase authentication in the first, and user and password authentication in the second. The third lab uses a similar flow, which perhaps the option of a custom XML connection instead of EDI, but also enables the server authentication, the server verification feature. Let's go to slide number 11. In this slide, I reported the configuration milestone needed to accomplish the labs mentioned earlier. There are five main tasks to tackle. Configure the SFTP receiver, which includes SSH server and IP port number, the remote event folder, the client authentication type, and there is the option whether you want to have server verification or not, and then creates the TP connection. Then we have the configured SFTP destination, which includes the same sub-steps as the receiver configuration. The next milestone is the setup of the SSH server, which includes setting the user home path, set the key path, and then we have to create the user and the actual user entities and the associated user folders, and install the certificates. Then we have to create and install the private and the public key when using this kind of client authentication. And the last milestone is to retrieve the server host key and update the host key file in the WPG configuration. Let's go to slide number 12. Here we have the two WPG items to be able to run the SFTP transaction, that is the receiver and the destination. In yellow, I highlighted the fields where you need to enter the configuration information. For example, as you can see, you need to enter the information about the SSH server IP or host name, the port number. For the receiver, you need to enter the folder where the files to retrieve are, which is indicated as a remote event directory, whereas for destination, you have to indicate the folder where the files need to be delivered. The client authentication type, whether that is a private key or a user password, with the associated information concerning the user ID and password, or the private key location and the passphrase if we choose to use the private key form of authentication. Lastly, the server verification, which is an option that can be turned off, which is also the default, or on, in which case you need to configure a host key file whose format and the composition is shown in a few slides. Let's go to slide number 13. Item number 3 of the configuration milestones is the SSH server configuration. The first thing you need to do is to download the software package from the URL reported in this chart. Then you have to install it, which is very simple. Just run the exe and take all the defaults. That's what I did. Next, you need to do a minimum configuration strictly necessary to run our test. That is, configure the home path in the SFTP tab and the public key path in the authentication tab. These steps are necessary so that the server knows where the home folders for the users is and where to go to find the public keys. Let's go to slide number 14. Now, continuing with the server configuration, you have to create a user for the receiver and one for the destination. Then select what kind of authentication you want in place, that is user password or public key. Also check the SFTP box for the protocol being used. Lastly, create the user home folder, which, very important, has to be named the same as the username. So go to the next slide, slide number 15. The last thing you need to do on the server side is to copy the client public key on the server folder specified in the authentication tab. The file containing the key must also be named the same as the username. As the footnote points out, if you wonder how and where you create the key pair, then you just have to wait for the next two slides. So let's go to slide number 16. To create the key pair, you need to download PuttyGen from the PuttyOrg site. Running the executable will prompt you a GUI panel, and you can generate the keys clicking on the generate button. You will be prompted at that time to move your mouse around to generate the randomness that will be used to create the keys. When this process is over, you can copy the keys in your hard drive. There are some important tips on how to save the keys that perhaps can be better explained in the next slide. Let's go to slide number 17. Okay, this is what the key generator panel looks like after the keys are created. Now, to save the public key, copy the text under the public key heading, which I marked yellow in the slide, into a file which, like we said earlier, has to be named as the username. Very important, do not use the save public key button in the panel, because it will save the key in a different format, than the needed OpenSSH format, which is the one that you should need. Next, you need to save the private key, and again, you don't want to use the save private key button for the same reason I mentioned earlier. What you need to do is to select the export open key of the conversions pull down as shown in the chart. Okay, let's go to slide number 18. This is the last of the five milestone configuration items, and is dedicated to the handling of the server host key. Now, each server has its own key, which you need to copy in a file using a very simple format, which is host name, then space, and then server host key. You just paste in the server host key right after the host name, and the two items are separated by a space, basically. Then you have to reference this file using a path and the file name in the receiver and or, if you choose to do so, destination configuration when you enable the server verification option. One particular to remember is that when creating the free SSHD server key pair using the PuttyGen tool, the private key must be saved without passphrase. With this chart, basically this concludes the configuration milestones. In the next 11 charts, we will take a look at three labs I mentioned earlier. So let's go on with slide number 19. The first lab is about configuring a transaction where a SFTP receiver picks up a file from one folder in the FreeSSHD server, processes it in and then handles it to the SFTP destination to be dropped in another folder on the same server. In this lab, I used private key authentication for both receiver and destination. The usernames are maxr for the receiver and maxd for the destination. The location of the private key file is reported as well. The passphrase value cannot be read, so make sure that you won't forget it. Just make a note of it. The server verification option has not been used in this lab. One more thing to notice is the message prompt in the destination panel when you save the configuration. It warns the user to restart the Doc Manager cluster to activate the configuration change. Of course, if you are in a simple or a simple distributed mode, then you need to restart the server one or the BCG server cluster. Let's move on to slide number 20. This is quite simple and shows the 9EDI X12 ISA connection and the MAXD SFTP destination being used for this test. So it is just a screenshot that will show you how to create the connection between the source and target for this specific test. Let's go on to slide 21. Here it shows the screenshot of the free SSHD server configuration. The users MaxR and MaxD are created and configured to use public key authorization and the SFTP protocol. Two folders named the same as the user names are created in the SFTP home path. And then the two public keys are placed in the public folder path. Okay, let's move on to slide 22. Now we're ready to run the test, basically. All you have to do, just place the EDI file in the MaxR folder for the WPG receiver to pick up. So after being processed, the output file is dropped in the MaxD folder as defined in the destination configuration. And you can see all these logical steps in the chart. So let's go to the next slide number 23. This is the second lab, which is similar to the first. We have the same configuration flow, but I created a new receiver and a new destination to use user password authentication, whereas I used private key authentication in the lab one. All the rest stays the same. So let's go on to slide number 24. Again, this is the connection configuration, which also stays the same, but the destination ID is changed to use MaxDU, which is the destination configured for the user password authentication. And that's the only difference with the same slide for the lab one. So let's move on to slide number 25. Now, this is the new free SSHD configuration that has to match the requirement to authenticate the client using the user and password. So I created two new users, MaxRU and MaxDU, and this time I selected the authorization to be password stored as SHA1 hash. Then you have to enter the actual password and select to use the SFTP protocol. One more thing that needs to be done is the creation of the two new user home folders as it is shown in the third screenshot at the bottom. Okay, let's move on to slide number 26. And finally, you run the test, just the same as we run it in the first example. Drop the EDI file in the MaxRU folder, which will be picked up, processed, and then delivered by the destination in the MaxDU folder. Okay, let's go on with slide number 27. We're now to lab 3, which adds the server verification to our scenario. In order to carry this test on, we need to create a key pair for the server, which can be done via PuTTYGen, the same way as we saw earlier when creating the key pair for the client. With one difference, though, the private key needs to be saved without the passphrase. So after saving the private key on disk, you can upload it in the free SSHD as shown in the slide, the top right screenshot. The highlighted public key text, on the other hand, needs to be saved in WPG host key using the format shown in the slide bottom right, that is host name or IP address, then space, and then the public key text, which can be pasted in. Let's go on to slide number 28. The receiver configuration will have the server verification option enabled, and as a consequence of that, you will have to enter the location of the host key file. You can use the server verification option with either type of client authentication, the user password as shown in the picture on the left, or a private key as shown in the picture on the right. Of course, the same concept would apply if you want to use the server verification for the destination. Let's go to slide number 29. I added one more twist here, using a custom XML instead of the EDI connection used in the previous labs. The rest is just about the same. You drop the file in the server max RU folder, the receiver picks it up, and after processing it, it is dropped in the destination of the maxd folder. Okay, let's go on to slide number 30. Okay, what about the logging and tracing? We have a specific string, com.ibm.j2ca, that you see, equal all, that needs to be used to switch the adapter logging to the debug level. You can see the exact string in the screenshot. This string can be added to the other logging levels that are already present that you want to use. Just make sure to separate them using a column. Of course, depending on what mode is being used, the change applies to different servers, to the different app servers as indicated in the lower part of the slide. Let's go on to slide number 31. Now, what if something happens? What troubleshooting tools can I use? Well, the debugging technique still uses the same WPG tools you're familiar with, the console viewers and the component logs. To these tools, I added also the SSH server log, which can be very useful to understand some specific scenario. Let's take a look at how these tools can be used. Let's go on to slide number 32. The event viewer and the document details viewer are a good start to understand what went wrong. In this case, for example, we can see that the document was successfully retrieved by the receiver, then was successfully processed and passed to the outbound processor to be delivered to the destination recipient. At this stage, the BCG25001 event error tells us that this last operation failed. So to find out more details on the specific reason for this failure, we need to debug the logs, which will allow a more detailed analysis of the root cause of this error. So let's move on to the next slide, slide number 33. Without entering in all the troubleshooting details, which would require a session only by itself, I reported here two error situations that could occur when the client authentication fails. The first one refers to an error scenario caused by using a mismatched key pair, which is tracked in the log by the red mark where the specific entry points to a problem with the keys being used. The second example shows the log highlights for an unsuccessful connection due to a failure to authenticate the password for the user. Again, the picture shows the server log, the system error, and the system out pointing to an error situation caused by an incorrect credentials presented to the server. I highlighted the actual error messages in the various logs, as you can see in the slide. Let's move on to the next slide, slide number 34. Now, this is the last slide where I reported some screenshots of the free SSHD server log, which could be very, very helpful to understand some error situations. The picture shows four different situations. A successful connection using public key authentication. You can see in there when the file is picked up by the WPG receiver. It is the line where the downloading word is underlined in red. The file is then removed after being picked up. See the line where the deleting word is marked in red. Next, the destination user, Max D, successfully connects using the public key authorization. And then the last line marked indicates when the file is dropped in the MaxD user folder by the WPG destination. Second example shows successful connection using user password authentication as shown in the marked line saying MaxD successfully logged on using password. The rest is pretty much the same sequence as we saw earlier. The third picture shows a successful connection by the MaxR WPG receiver, the receiver user, using public key authentication. The retrieval and the deletion of the file from the user folder and then follows the unsuccessful connection attempt by the WPG destination caused by the authentication failure. And you can see, you know, the big arrow with in red pointing to the exact messages. This concludes the presentation, basically, and I'm going to turn the presentation back to Joseph.
Thank you, Max, for a great presentation. At this point, Daniel, we would like to open the line for questions.
We'll hear from Sovik Nandi.
Hello. I would just like to ask if the SSTP receiver supports the binary files, that is, not EDI or not XML files, but binary flat files.
Hello, Sovik. At the present time, we do not support that feature. This is something that has been raised to the development. They are aware of it. So although I can't tell you what they're going on, what I can tell you, it is something that we are aware of and the development has been informed about. So although we don't support it right now, development is aware of it and hopefully we'll have something should come out about it.
Okay.
There appear to be no further questions at this time.
Thank you, Daniel. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.